It's the New Books and Food Podcast.
Hi, it's Alan Salkin from New Books and Food. My wonderful guest today is Hannah Raskin, the food editor and chief critic of the Post and Courier newspaper of Charleston, South Carolina, and more importantly for our purposes, the author of Yelp Help, How to Write Great Online Restaurant Reviews, a book and advice which is much needed by those of us who actually want to get some use out of Yelp. Hello, Hannah.
Hi, Alan.
So before we delve into the book, what gives you the right to give other people advice on how to write Yelp reviews? Who are you?
Well, as you said, I am the critic and food editor here at the Post and Courier in Charleston, and previously served in pretty much the same role at the Seattle Weekly and Dallas Observer, both which at the time were part of the Village Voice chain. They were all weeklies. So I've been doing this for a while, but I think the whole premise of Yelp is it doesn't really matter who you are. We all have a right to jump in on this. So hoping to help, though, with some of the experience I've gained.
How did you start in food writing?
I got started with it, took the academic route, which is a lonely route to go. I was in grad school at the State University of New York's Cooperstown Graduate Program, which is a museum studies and American history program. Thinking I wanted to be a museum exhibit designer, I had gone back to school after a few years of daily journalism. And it turned out I didn't. It turned out that working in museums is not nearly as fun as going to them. But I had the opportunity to write a thesis on the relationship between Jews and Chinese food. And so that was great because
well,
this was...
Well, it's only three words, isn't it?
It was that, you mean Christmas
we,
Day
we,
and
no.
Eve? Or
we like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
exactly. And so it was really fun because this was like 2002, I guess. So like early on for food history, I mean, it's amazing as many people has practiced this discipline. Now it's like kind of the dawn of thinking about food in a historic context. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got to know all these folks who were, you know, interested in the same things and different food writers. So since I'd had, you know, this journalism background and had been a waitress forever, I had moved down to Asheville, North Carolina after grad school, and they were adding a food section. And so, again, between the academic background, you know, having had a chance to do some professional writing at that point, and knowing food, I started there.
You know, it's something that I'm talking about a lot and writing about a lot now is how hard it is to get into this business now. It's almost like you can be better than any of us were when we started, mm-hmm. but they're just, you know, the it may be that a lot of the entry level, you know, the sort of easy entry period is over.
I that may be right. And I think everyone, you know, everyone thinks kids today have it easier, right? So I think you think like, wow, now you can just get a blog and publish your own writing. But of course, reality is everyone else is doing that too. So,
no, and I'm sure you get asked all the time, well, how'd you get into it? I mean, you must mm-hmm. answer that question, you know, five times
yeah.
a week.
Right. Get asked that all the time. And the reality is, I mean, the one way I do answer it is the one way to not get into this business for anyone who's, I suppose, listening and interested is, I don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't think of anyone who's writing and writing at a high level on a daily basis who was a chef first. A lot of people think you need to go through a professional restaurant career. And there are, I mean, there are some of us who have done some time in kitchens for sure. But for the most part, the folks I know who are doing this regularly, I mean, I think it's great. I was a server for a while. I think there's no better way to learn to describe food than to know the table isn't going to order it unless you sell them on it. You know, I think that was some of my best training for matching words with dishes. But yeah, I tend to find a lot of just, you know, the civilian audience thinks, you know, you start in culinary school and I'm pretty sure that never works.
Well, first of all, there's one exception, which is Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
But, you know, he obviously a massive talent who was actually kind of writing all along, writing mysteries before he
right.
wrote No Reservations.
Before
he wrote Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah, I think of him almost as a writer first. You know, I think it's, you know, I'm not saying he can't cook, but I think he already had that you know, the perspective when he went into the kitchen.
And then there was Brian Miller, who was the New York Times restaurant critic, sort of in the 90s.
Yeah.
And he had been a daily reporter first, then went to culinary school because he wanted to become a restaurant critic.
Yes. Which is not a bad thing to do. You know, about, I don't know, a couple of years back when I was in Dallas, I did the first year of culinary school. And again, I was already, you know, a professional paid critic at that point. But I thought, boy, you know, it couldn't hurt to kind of bone up on which sauce is which. So I think that's good. But I think, you know, the fundamentals really come from the writing and the daily journalism.
Before we delve deeper into Yelp Help, the book, I wanted to also ask the way we met was that I was doing an appearance from my book From Scratch, and so I'm going to promote it on my own podcast, From Scratch, The Uncensored History of the Food Network. And I was doing an appearance down in Charleston, actually at a Jewish community center to promote the book. And you had fairly recently at that time, a year and a half or so ago, come in. And Charleston hadn't really had somebody who was critical before. The food scene was sort of germinating and had really, with Sean Brock being there, had taken off not that long ago. And so they were not used to, in those parts, somebody writing anything but glowing coverage of every possible thing that was happening. And I'm curious how that's played out and what, you know, an update on your experience in Charleston.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you're exactly right. I mean, I came in feeling like this town was ready for real criticism, because they're certainly ready to claim all the awards and accolades that come with world-class restaurants. I mean, we currently here in Charleston have 4 working chefs with James Beard Awards, which, I mean, per capita, for, you know, we're a city of 200,000 people. That's pretty good. So it's a town that's pretty serious about food. And for me, that goes hand in hand with criticism and kind of, you know, rigorous scrutiny of what's being served and putting that in context. But as you say, the tradition here had always been to say, every restaurant is great. We love them all. Which, you know, I think does a great disservice to the ones who really, really are good.
Yes.
And I'm sure you remember the story that at the time. There are some people in Charleston who will never, ever like me. That's just how mm-hmm. it is. But I do feel that more people are like, yep, you know, we get what she's doing. And they're starting to feel a little bit more, you know, a little bit more proud and possessive than they may have had 2 years ago. But as you remember, you were here just after I'd written a review of this kind of beloved place that has been, you know, kind of going downhill for a while. And, you know, one of the readers called me and she said, you know, everything you said was true, but you never should have said it.
Mm.
And that's sort of the Charleston perspective, which is what I've been fighting, that, you know, a lot of these things, people know which restaurants are good and which aren't, or at least the people who are wealthy enough to patronize them regularly do. But I feel like, you know, my readers often don't have that luxury. And so I want to, you know, share the news with them as well.
Well, is there a sort of Southern way that you've maybe learned to put just the thinnest coat of candy coating on it before you stick the knife in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's appropriate no matter where you live. I mean, you know, you really want to give people credit for the hard work they're investing. And, you know, and that's what gets under my skin most are the restaurants where you feel like it's just such a cynical enterprise that they're not investing a whole lot of work and they're just trying to, you know, save money on whatever cheap meat they can buy. But so, you know, wherever it's warranted, of course, I think that's appropriate. And, you know, I've been in the South for a while. As I said, I was in North Carolina and Texas. So I kind of get how it works. And I think it's just, you know, when I was in high school, you know, where they have the senior wills, I was well tacked. It's not something I have much of. So, you know, I'm adapting as much as I can. But
well,
I tend to be pretty honest.
This may be my New York / L.A. kind of perspective, but I think to not be truthful is to be rude to others. I think it's a high calling to boldly say what's what, and, you know, it's rude to the universe and to the people who are spending 35 cents on a newspaper to not tell the truth.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yelp Help. So the book, it's, what is it, a year or 2 years old at this point? And, you know, the situation on Yelp has only in some ways gotten more difficult because I think that it's almost like every restaurant has like a 4-star review because there's a certain number of people who will hate it, but then people almost like rush to its defense, and it's almost anyway. But let's get to the basics. What is? Tell me about the book and how it came about.
So the book came about because when you're working as a critic in a big city, you have to use Yelp. There's really no way around it because you are not going to get to every restaurant, nor are you going to know people who've been to every restaurant. And of course, you don't always want to be writing about the restaurants everyone already knows about. So, you know, if you, you know, dig into a corner of the city that you haven't been before, you're absolutely going to check Yelp. Just to see what's happening. And I would glean facts from it more than opinion. You know, it's really useful to say like, boy, you know, I wonder what's happening in the Cambodian community. And you'd say like, okay, this zip code is kind of where Cambodians live. So let's zero in on restaurants there. And now I just want to know, you know, are you serving a certain kind of dumpling? Great. Like that's really useful. So we all use Yelp, whether in big cities or especially in small towns. And I think I talk about this in the book. When you're traveling, you know, through South Dakota at, you know, 9 o'clock at night, there is no professional critic, you know, to turn to. So Yelp is great for that. I mean, the breadth of Yelp is fantastic just as a database alone. But of course, in reading through Yelp, I realized just how mediocre the write-ups were at best. So my hope was that to kind of, you know, elevate the discussion online, and even more so to kind of enrich people's experiences of dining, because I firmly believe that writing adds to your dining experience. I mean, because it does demand a certain amount of attention and appreciation. And so it's really just about rounding out the dining experience.
But how do you read between the lines of – so I get it. It's good for basic information. And I agree. Like just sometimes you just want to know where's the closest hamburger.
Yep.
And actually, as an aside, two of your Charleston compatriots, Matt Lee and Ted Lee, I saw them last night because they do a cookbook boot camp actually
yes.
in Brooklyn and Charleston, and they were starting one in Brooklyn, and I needed a hamburger. And Ted, who I contend that Ted Lee looks like Matt Lee, like a Matt, and Matt Lee looks like he should be called Ted. But nevertheless,
the secret is Ted Tall. That's his name. Ted
Tall.
Is that
what it is?
Middle Matt. Yeah.
I've now just started, and I hope that, well, they probably will listen, but I just started trying to like conflate Matt with a doormat, even though he's not doormat like in any way. I'm trying to make it onomatopoeic.
Right.
Whatever the hell it is. So,
yeah.
I haven't tried stepping on him, though, which I would never do because I like
don't
him.
Don't do that.
Like
he's a nice guy.
They're great. Yeah. The Lee brothers. And check out their latest book, which is called Charleston Kitchen, I believe, or the Lee brothers Charleston Kitchen.
Yep.
So they sent me to a hamburger nearby, which was awesome, at the Trophy Room on Broadway in Williamsburg, which I suggest because it's a $5 happy hour hamburger, which is a great deal in New York.
Cool.
Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is because what is it that – is what was I going to say? So you get basic information from the Yelp reviews, but how do we read? I feel like I used to be able to read a Yelp review or a series of Yelp reviews and be able to read between the lines to figure out whether a place was good or not beyond
right.
just the stars. And is there? Have we lost that? Have people figured out the code? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that I can still read between the lines.
Okay. I mean, I haven't been – I don't know what's happening in New York and, you know, y'all may be ahead of us. But I think it's still possible. I pay zero attention to stars. I mean, I think the stars are ridiculous because I don't think – and stars are a problem even in professional reviewing. You know, nobody's really clear about what they mean and, you know, how many stars is good, how many are bad. So I ignore the stars entirely. So we already talked about the factuals. But, I mean, I think there are other things that give you a – I mean, you get a sense. Like, you know what style service. Hopefully you know what the room looks like, you know, and even if the reviewer didn't take the right cues from that, you still know what it means when there are Edison bulbs hanging from the ceiling. You know, you understand that. Yeah.
That's true.
So I think that's still there.
Although now, you know, it's like that Brooklyn style, you know, I'm ready for like, you know, the space age style to come back. I want to walk into a place that's all Formica.
I'm going the other way. I'd love to see more curtains and carpets again.
Oh, that far?
Yeah. I think that's a great look.
I don't know.
It's fun, and it also makes the room quiet.
What about smell? Do you think smell should be in every review? I think, you know, I will not stay in a restaurant if the first smell I get is of like a cleaning product or just something bad.
The thing that drives me nuts is when restaurants have like scented hand soap in the bathroom and like great, you know, now my whole meal is going to taste like roses, which is the worst. I think there is a list in the book of things you want to ask yourself about your surroundings and what's on your plate. And absolutely, I mean, you're going to smell the room before. I mean, that's the first sense to register whether you're conscious of it or not. And it should make you hungry. It should make you want to eat. So, yeah, if you're smelling ammonia, that should absolutely be noted.
Where's this list?
I can't quote it.
Deconstructing the review. I'm looking. Here's some questions to ask. How a critic approaches a restaurant. For instance, ambiance, since we're talking about that.
Yep.
How loud is the room? Smartphone apps for measuring decibel levels are available. What are most diners wearing? What are people at nearby tables discussing? This is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there music playing? So this is good for any review.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's not, you know, singly for Yelp. It's really for anything. Like I said, it's just kind of like, you know, deepening the restaurant experience.
Are there televisions in the room? That does tell you a lot. Can you dine outside? You know, I'm actually composing a piece. There's this great project. One of my, I think my previous interview on this podcast was about restaurant menus in Los Angeles. There's a great new collection that's out called To Live and Dine in L.A. And you look at some of these historic menus and they weren't shy in the 1930s and 40s about having, you know, 40, 50 options on a menu.
Right.
And that's so out of style now.
Right. And so now if you see a menu that long, again, that really indicates something about the restaurant. And I think, you know, at that part of the book, what I'm talking about is one of the you know, biggest missteps I see on Yelp are people holding a restaurant to standards that they've imposed on it. When in fact, you really need to measure a restaurant against what it's trying to do, you know? So you don't go to a restaurant with six things on their menu and say, you know, I'm really sorry I couldn't get liver and onions. I mean, that's not what they're there for. So I think there is that learning to match up the signals there the restaurant is giving you with, you know, the experience that you're having.
I want to talk about stars because you have here something from the Association of Food Journalists suggesting what stars mean. 4 stars is extraordinary, transcendent, a one-of-a-kind experience that sets the local standard. 3 stars is excellent, superior, memorable, high-quality food, exciting environs, savvy service. 2 stars, solid example of restaurant type, which people should know that is 2 stars is not bad.
Right.
Even 1 star can be, you know.
Even 1 star is okay. The way I've started to explain this, and it's not perfect, but I liken it to baseball. You know, like you don't get on first base every time. Like it may not be that exciting, but that's still a hit. Like 1 star is okay.
Also, like dating, you don't get the first base every time.
Exactly. But
nor should you want to. It's okay.
Right.
give me some of the, you know, basic advice that people should think about when writing a Yelp review.
Sure. Well, I think the probably most important thing is first pay attention while you're dining. It's great to go in and know that I'm going to be reviewing this. And if you do, you know, try and have as full of an experience as you can. So you often see Yelp reviews, which are, you know, useful to nobody that say like, you know, I dropped in on my coworker's office party and I had an iced tea and it was a little sweet and maybe I'll go back another time. That doesn't help anybody. So, you know, I think if you go in, think about like, how can I fully experience this place as much as I can on my, you know, on my budget. And then also, you know, what I do as a critic, and I think, you know, it's totally available for everybody now, you know, you can document your meal, take some pictures. Everyone has a phone these days, you know, take a note or two if you want. And then don't write the review as soon as you get home. Like let it sit, write it the next day, see what still sticks with you. Especially if you think you're going to write a negative review. I think it's really nice to just kind of let that simmer before you put it into print.
Negative, you know, of course, there are the negative reviews, which are like, and I know you don't spend time in the book attacking Yelpers. Mm-hmm. And also, it's Yelp is not the only, this is called right. Yelp Help, but there are other places to leave
only
reviews.
Only because it rhymes. Yeah.
There's, in fact, I'm doing a little research project on Yelp, and there are a lot of people who use TripAdvisor for restaurant recommendations.
Yeah, TripAdvisor, I think we've talked about this, is hugely popular, especially with a slightly older demographic. I don't know where the cutoff is. Maybe it's 45, 50, 55, somewhere in there. I feel like that age and up, they're much more comfortable with TripAdvisor.
If people are hearing some construction noise in the background, it's in New York City. They're building something everywhere. And so next to me, they're putting up some luxury condos. And I think they're like drilling somebody's hot tub in right now or something.
And it's probably not going to be picked up by my phone. But if you hear a palm tree swaying in the breeze, that's literally what's happening outside my window.
That sounds nice.
Yes.
So you don't want to attack Yelpers, but there is that we showed up for my boyfriend's birthday party, and those are the ones that you kind of know you're in for a long story at that point, and
right.
It usually involves they refuse to bring out a birthday cake with candles and have all the servers gather around and sing, which is what I expect any restaurant would do, is to have the waiters all sing happy birthday to my boyfriend, and therefore I'm giving them one star.
Right. And I do, in the book, there is a chapter devoted to sort of how a restaurant works, because I do think that's important that your expectations be in line with what's possible. You know, you're right. Birthdays seem to be when a lot of people who don't often go to restaurants go to restaurants. And so I see a lot on Yelp about, they didn't want me to hang a pinata from their ceiling, or, it's like, okay, that doesn't happen in restaurants. I almost wonder if a birthday even belongs on Yelp. That's such a different and certain experience.
It's also the case that people, even now when, food is so, so important to everybody, and every little gradation, every bite is analyzed, but that there's still something very personal about a restaurant experience, because it's like a home. It reminds people of their homes, and it's almost like they act out sometimes. It's not there's this feeling like, while I'm at this table, I own this table. And this isn't a criticism. I think mm-hmm. it's a very intense experience of, you're serving me food and everything is scrutinized because my mom didn't, whatever. I'm going to get autobiographical. My father didn't let us put our elbows on the table. But go
right.
ahead.
Well, because I do think when you go into a restaurant, especially if you don't go into them on a regular basis, but even if you do, I mean, you are surrendering a tremendous amount of control, and you're putting a lot of trust in that restaurant not to kill you, which is what food can do. I mean, food can make you really sick. It can kill you. So I think I understand people's anxieties when they come into a restaurant. I think it can be a very fraught situation. It certainly is up to the restaurant to calm those nerves. But I don't think it's a crazy thing that people have a lot of emotions that come to the surface when they're sitting at a restaurant table.
There was a piece recently about how a study that showed that chimpanzees or apes.
Oh, that's like great.
They prefer cooked food, basically. And if
it's
they could cook, they would.
Yeah, it's such a fantastic study. So it turns out that they are willing to wait, which, animals never are. They don't have anything, approaching willpower. But chimps are willing to wait. They will put food in something that functions like an oven, and they will sit and wait because they can appreciate that a cooked sweet potato is tastier than a raw one.
Which it is, because the sugars caramelize.
Yeah.
Let's talk Charleston for a second. Where should we eat now? That's going to rain. We're going to talk over and pretend it's
okay,
not happening.
Okay, cool. So one of the restaurants I'm super excited about right now, and this is sort of just brand new on the scene, is St. Alban, which is kind of the cafe extension of Leon's Oyster House, which opened last year and got a lot of attention. This is a project of Brooks Wright's, who was the general manager at Fig for years and years. So if people came down and did the celebratory at Fig, they may very well know Brooks. He also makes the Jack Rudy Tonic, which is all over New York. Mm. So he's opened two restaurants, both they share a chef. They're maybe a block away. The first of which I said is Leon's, which is doing fried chicken and oysters, and particularly if you can just manage one dish there, it's the char-grilled oysters are phenomenal. And St. Alban is sort of this little, like, European...
Wait, hold on. Can I order one dish that is fried chicken and fried oysters in the same kind of plate?
You could get fried chicken and fried oysters together, but I'm suggesting the char-grilled oysters, which are plate on their own. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You can definitely do that. Okay, we'll fry anything for you down here. And so St. Alban started as a coffee house with a, you know, fairly elaborate sherry program and has now started...
A sherry program?
Yeah. Yep. So... We're not too far behind down here. So they've got a lot of sherries and now dinner service, which is sort of, and I should mention the chef's name is Ari Colander. And he's just doing a really beautiful job with local foods and kind of bringing it into the Southern European tradition. There's lots of anchovies, lots of peppers, and it's lots of deliciousness.
Is Husk still what it was?
Husk is what it was. I think much to the consternation of some locals who don't like it. It is probably the most polarizing restaurant in Charleston County. And there are all sorts of opinions as to why.
What are the polar extremes?
So it's gotten to the point where, you know, people say to me, I go out and give a lot of speeches. I'm like, do you know which restaurant I can't stand? Like, Husk? It's always Husk. Mm. People hate Husk. And the reason... There's a guy here who's been in town for a long time, and he thinks it alienated locals by taking a pan-Southern approach rather than just serving a lot of rice. I think actually what's happening there is that the service style at Husk is such that when you go there, they treat you like you're very lucky to be there. And I think for tourists, that kind of, you know, conforms to how they feel. They do feel lucky to be there. But for locals... That's not how they feel. They want to be treated like regulars, and that's just not part of the Husk service style.
It's more traditional, formal. It's not terribly formal, but it's formal-ish.
It's formal-ish. Like, for example, like, you know, I have a friend who lives here, and she was there with family and walked in with her Starbucks cup, and they said, you can't bring that in. Whereas in any other Charleston restaurant, they would know her name. They would bring her a cup of coffee. And so it doesn't have sort of that friendly demeanor that I think Charlestonians expect from their local restaurants.
Something I think we talked about a while ago was that it was the first place that was kind of expensive. And it kind of changed how much it cost to eat in Charleston.
Right. We did talk about that. Yeah, that they kind of pushed the prices upward a little bit because, you know, people were lining up out the door, so everyone else followed along. Yeah, Charleston is not a cheap place to eat. It is on par with any of the major cities.
And people... Unfortunately, as good as some of the dishes that the now somewhat disgraced and still beloved by others, Paula Deen, you know, made, kind of reinforced, and as did her attitudes, kind of, or, you know, what she supposedly said, reinforced a kind of idea of Southern food as this fattening, you know, everything fried, et cetera, et cetera. And also, you know, I think in New York City, the editors are still somewhat surprised occasionally that there are I don't share this view, but that there's anybody, you know, from the South who doesn't have a Paula Deen thick accent and who maybe actually has read some books and is smart and can do something sophisticated. And I'm certainly, let me just say again, I'm not saying I share that attitude, but it's almost like the kind of cliche of the white Southerner is more persistent than racism is. Mm-hmm. And that there is interesting cooking and unique cooking. I mean, is there still any kind of barrier like that? Or do you find yourself as you travel around having to defend what's going on there?
I think word is getting out more and more, but it is true. I was just at this past weekend. I was up in Ann Arbor, which is where I grew up, and I was at Zingerman's, was having a Camp Bacon program, which they do each year. And so, you know, the topic of Southern food came up. I mean, partly because I was there, and people would say, "Oh, you know, I love Southern food," and immediately apologize, like, "Well, I know it's not good for you," mm-hmm. which is, you know, as you and I know, it's not the case. I mean, if you want to eat leafy greens, you know, kale was popular here first. Yeah. You know, I mean, we've got lots of healthy food. So yeah, I do think that stigma persists.
No, in fact, I ate in an Austrian restaurant in New York, Cafe Kacha, the other day, and it was, you know, not what I expected from Austrian food either. That you know, obviously fresh white, seasonal white asparagus, and lighter. And also, you know, you can't mention Zingerman's without saying it's one of the greatest places to eat in the country. And that's just sort of a Jewish deli in Ann Arbor, which people might not expect.
Right, right. And one of the great ones that's kind of, you know, upholding all those great deli traditions. So.
And they do mail order.
I'm
not getting paid. what else do you, what's the follow-up to Yelp Help? What's next?
Well, I'm continuing to, you know, work on what's in Yelp Help. I'm doing, you know, more and more classes and things, and it really is a lot of fun to put food in front of people and kind of and work through reviews with them. So that's been great. I've been doing a lot of that.
What do you mean classes?
So I've been doing, it's going into like cooking schools and things, but doing like Yelp classes essentially. And what's really fun is some of these cooking schools, I'm thinking of Southern Season, which has a location here in Mount Pleasant, right outside Charleston. They're incredibly great to work with because they will prepare food that is not good. So we can work with the students of like, how do you assess a dish that really tastes terrible?
No, is this a class for people who want to write reviews, or is this a class for future restaurant professionals?
I mean, they can go off and do whatever they'd like with this information. I had a student in my last class who said she's writing a romance novel about a food critic and just needed some background information. So they can do whatever they like with it. But the idea is that they do feel more equipped to get online and post their reviews.
But how can a restaurant improve other than just serving good food and have a good service? Is there a trick that a restaurant can use to sort of make Yelp or amateur reviewers happier?
Oh, that's a great question. Boy, you know, I think good service is going to do it, right? I think as long as it's good, hospitable service, and making sure that nobody leaves the room angry, because those are the worst Yelp reviews. I mean, I'm always encouraging the people I talk to, look, if you have a problem, take it to the manager before you take it to Yelp.
Which some restaurants have on their menu now.
Yeah.
I've seen that written on the menu. Please don't just write a negative review about us. Just in fact, it was a place in on my book tour in Indianapolis, a really good sort of coffee shop deli.
Wow.
It had that written on the menu.
Wow.
We want to make it better. Please let us make it better.
Wow. That's great. That's great. So, yeah, I mean, I think as long as restaurateurs do that, they should be in good shape.
I also think I'd offer the suggestion that, you know, people who take pictures of their food, have some of them have figured this out, that the best way to get a good picture of food with your cell phone is to have somebody else at your table use their flashlight on their phone,
right,
and light the food and from a different angle, hold the flashlight sort of above it, and you take the picture. And so it might be, rather than restaurants trying to stop people from taking pictures of food, have the waiters kind of walk around with little flashlights that they can light the food for you as soon as it arrives.
I think that would be great. I just had a great meal up at Ardent in Milwaukee, where it's really nice. They bring around like this basically like a little sleeping bag for your phone. It's this like this wooden thing, and it's got like a little fur pocket on it or something. And so when I first saw this, I was like very embarrassed and thinking they want me to hide the phone away, because you know how many venues say like, you know, put your cell phone away. But no, they want you to use your phone. They just want to make sure that you can enjoy your food, and when you splash and splatter, that it doesn't get on the phone. Which I think is great. I mean, yeah, you know, if you want to, these people are going to get online, you know, encourage those people.
Or even set up a little like, you know, I could almost see like a miniature photo light on a tripod for your table. Like make it a little like, have like a cart that goes around with like a photo
a
tray.
Station. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think we have a marketing idea here. Where, if people want to take your classes or find out more about you, where do they go?
Best way to find me is through the paper. So that's postandcourier.com/food. And that's
what story are you working on now?
Let's see. I am now writing about this afternoon. Actually, I'm just writing about a taco battle that the various restaurants in town, that you're just kind of F&B folks after hours behind the scenes have been doing. Which is, it's really fun. So it's like, you know, an Italian restaurant takes on a Japanese restaurant,
with tacos.
Taco versus taco. Yeah, exactly.
I'm hoping to set up an interview with, Jordana Rothman and Alex Stupak, who have a new taco book coming out.
Yes.
Did you get the review copy?
I was going to say, I have not gotten my copy yet, but it looks fantastic. So,
And how is the newspaper doing? I can't let you go without asking that.
Sure. We won a Pulitzer Prize. So there's this year.
Yeah. That's nice. But how is it doing?
No, we're doing really well. I mean, the great thing, I've said this many times about Charleston. And I always hate when people say, I've said this many times, girls, well, it's getting really boring now. But, you know, they eat like a big city and they read the paper like a small town. Everyone reads the paper. That makes a big difference. So very high penetration. So that's good. So it's doing pretty well.
Look forward to seeing you when next you make your way up to New York. And thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been Hannah Raskin talking to Alan Salkin, which is me. And after I stop talking here, you're going to hear a little like outro where else you can find stuff and about me and about.com and this book and other stuff. But, you know, at the top of this, you probably heard Marshall, who runs a New Books Network, ask for a little donation to keep this wonderful thing going. And this New Books Network isn't just about food. It's also about weird academic topics of, you know, new books in Slavic studies. And it's not that weird if you're into it, but, you know, Asian art and my friend Tracy Morgan, not the actor, but the psychoanalyst, does new books in psychoanalysis. And she's really quite a big deal in the community because of it. So this is it's an awesome resource. And I know everybody says that about everything they do, but it really is. So, you know, send a dollar to New Books Network. Anyway, thanks, Hannah. And thank you to me. And this is New Books and Food, part of the New Books Network at newbooksnetwork.com, where there are interviews with authors on every subject you can imagine. It's a great site. Check it out to find recipes and other material related to what we talked about today. Check out cookbooks.about.com, the about.com website for which I am the cookbooks and food writing expert. My website is allensalkin.com, A-L-L-E-N, S like Sam, A-L-K-I-N. All my social media is Alan Salkin. Also, Instagram, Facebook is facebook.com/Salkin. Twitter is Alan Salkin. I think you can find me. Guess what? My name's Alan Salkin. Thanks for listening.